You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to episode 24 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Max.
And today we're joined by our very special guest, Josh. How's it going, Josh?
Well, I don't know how special I am, but I appreciate it.
But well, I mean, for those people who don't know, what is your relationship with Star Trek? How'd you get involved in it? Are you a Star Trek fan and all that good stuff?
Well, yeah, I grew up watching the original series with my dad, and then when TNG premiered, I was in the first grade, 6 years old, and I was hooked. And it's pretty much shaped me into the maladjusted dork that I am today.
We know you from your commentaries on the soulless minions of Orthodoxy.
Yep.
Which in itself is a Star Trek reference.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, where you do audio commentaries for movies, and where can people find that show?
Well, on iTunes, like every other podcast on the planet, and soullessminions.libsyn.com.
But, you know, after doing a couple commentaries with you for things such as Star Trek Nemesis and Lower Decks and various other Star Trek things, which people can find either on your site or on our site, at one point you were like, hey, I want to do a Star Trek podcast. And you asked me if I wanted to be involved with it. And at the time I was like planning a wedding and I had absolutely no free time at all. And I was like, I'd you know, love to do that, but I can't, you know, like I'll come on it or whatever. And then that show eventually became the Delta Quadrant, which was quite popular and everything, and at one point, you know, we filled in for you guys, and that's where we met like Colin and Charlene and all this other stuff. You know, right. Then that's how I met all of the Trek FM people, which may be a little ironic seeing as how the Delta Quadrant is now on Trekmate, but whatever, you know. so we have you to thank for this show, or you to blame for this show.
The Cardassian Empire.
I'm always more willing to accept blame, so I'll take that.
Today we're starting up a new series. This one, it's our big season-ending arc. We started the season by looking at the work of Gene Roddenberry as a television creator, and we figured that we would end it with the last guy who created a Star Trek show, and that would be Brannon Braga. And we're going to look at what he has done as a television creator. So today we are going to cover his work on Star Trek. Let's just start by what our opinions of him in general as a Star Trek creator. Josh, are you a Brannon Braga fan?
Sure. I'm a fan of anyone who is prolific in their work, even if it's considered to be good or not.
And specifically, what do you like about Braga or Braga's episodes? Do you have like a general thing? Like if you see like, oh, Brannon Braga wrote this episode, like do you have a certain level of expectation or?
No. Give me a reference to a, can you give me a TNG episode he may have written that was considered bad?
Bottom of the barrel Braga. I mean like the thing which he is notoriously, you know, known for is Threshold.
Well, that was the most fun I had recording for the Delta Quadrant was when we reviewed that episode. Not because I think it's bad, but because there's this stigma going around about it that it's the worst Star Trek episode ever made. That it's even worse than Spock's brain or something. I'm like, what? It's not bad. It's silly. It's enjoyable.
I think it's an easy target because it's so goofy. But there are plenty of episodes out there which are far less watchable.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, you look at this list, I mean, I know that people really tend to hate on Brannon Braga, which he is completely aware of, and we can get into that later on, but, you know.
You wonder what that must do to someone's personality, you know, when their work is out in the open like that, and it's so heavily criticized, how they can get, you know? You know,
he's talked about that. He's like, you know, he's like, I've written 111 of these things, and the one that anyone ever wants to talk about is Threshold. He's like, yeah, it was terrible. You know, we dropped the ball, but we made 111 of these things. You know, there's a lot of good stuff in there, too. And, you know, I mean, like, I mean, I've told this story about how I saw him at a convention.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was up on stage and he's talking and talking. And then at one point he stops and he says, "I just saw someone come into the room, say, 'Is that Brandon Braga?' and then turn around and leave."
Oh.
And it's like, you know, I mean, he's got a sense of humor about it. And to me, you know, and my impression of Brandon Braga is, yeah, of course he's made some crappy episodes, but he's made a lot of really good episodes, too. Yeah. In fact, he's made some of my favorite episodes. And I can't hate on the guy, because I think that Star Trek is better for having him than for not having him. And I also think that a lot of it comes from comparing him to his old writing partner, Ron Moore. It's like you've got, you know, Braga and Moore, they were a team. They had done a lot of stuff together. And, you know, after Next Generation and the movies, you know, Moore went to Deep Space Nine and Braga went to Voyager. And it's like, well, obviously, if you compare anyone to Ron Moore, it's not going to be favorable because Ron Moore is quite possibly the best television writer in history. So, you know, yeah, but that doesn't mean that Braga's bad.
Maybe, but that is still ranking them on like a very linear scale. You're saying like Ron Moore's a better writer, and I don't agree with that. I think he's better at a certain type of thing,
and even more so,
better at serialized drama.
And maybe that's sure. even more so. You know what I mean? But it's like you're stacking the deck. I mean, Braga has the deck stacked so far against him that he could never win.
And if you look at the writing partner, if you look at Ron Moore versus Brandon Braga, and you look at where they went, and you think that Ron Moore went off to BSG and Braga went on to create Enterprise, Braga seems to be much more creative.
Yeah.
He seems to be the guy that comes up with crazy ideas and tries to make them work. And, you know, like, Ron Moore had a few really good ideas. But, I mean, in terms of just raw creativity, I mean, I give the award to Braga.
So Max, what are your thoughts on Braga in general?
Well, you know, when you're deep in the world, you know, like my intermittent, you know, frustration with Rick Berman, like, it's very similar in that, you know, like, I focus on the things that bug me.
Mm-hmm.
But like ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, I if the chips were down and the zombies were on the attack, and like you know I was standing there next to like Brandon Braga and like random other person, I'd be like, "Have no fear, Brandon. I shall protect you."
Well, let's just take a look at you know sort of what Brandon Braga's Star Trek career entailed. For those who don't know, I think we're going to hit mainly the high points, sort of the landmarks in his career, mm-hmm. at least as I see them. Let's just start with his very first episode, which was Reunion. I did like this episode, a good solid start to Braga's career. And like looking at, you know, the other episodes that he did in Next Generation, most of them were pretty good. You know, he did The Game, which, you know, we actually did a commentary on. I think we were all big fans of that.
I really am not a big fan of that.
Okay.
Well, you were a big fan of it.
Cause and Effect, which I like quite a bit. I know that Max has problems with it. And I mean, like, Cause and Effect is something which I think is very exciting. Now, I mean, we can talk about that. The fact that one of the trademarks in Braga's career is time travel. People always bring up the fact that he seems obsessed with time travel, or maybe he just uses it as a crutch. And I know that, Max, you've been rather critical about the way that he uses time travel in most instances. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, I think he doesn't understand it.
I think time travel is, it's a tricky thing. I mean, you can make it work for yourself in whatever context you're using it. You just have to abide by your own rules, right?
Well, no, because, I mean, there are rules of basic causality that we are all aware of in life. I mean, if you go back in time 5 minutes, walk into the room and say, "Hey, I'm from the future," that did not happen to you right now.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, having heard both sides of this argument, you know, numerous times, I think that I see where both of you are coming from, you know, and what Max is talking about, and this sort of became crystal clear for me when I was listening to him talk about Back to the Future. Back to the Future, you know, is a movie which I never had any problem with the time travel in until Max broke it down and said, "Look, do you see why this doesn't work?" And then, you know, once he explained it, I was like, okay, yeah, that you're right. That logically, if you think about it logically, it doesn't work. But the other side of that, you know, where Josh is coming from, and which is probably, I fall in the middle, I guess, you know. You've got to take into account, you know, the way that you're telling the story and the effect that you're going for, and whether or not, you know, part of, you know, bending and breaking these rules is whether or not, you know, the audience is going to be forgiving of you for doing so. And like, if you look at Back to the Future, I think that's one of the best movies ever made, and they are able to get away with it because of sort of the package that they wrap it in. And I recently saw an interview with Brandon Braga, which I think was done for Trek Corps or something like that, where they talked to him about time travel and, you know, why he keeps on going back to it. And his whole thing, you know, which he pretty much flat out said, was that he does not really care about the physics of time travel, the mechanics of it. He's much more interested in it on a metaphorical level. And when you think about that idea, you know, I mean, maybe you could say that he's being sloppy with it and that he could come up with it, you know, but the fact of the matter is, lots of the stuff that he does, you know, using time travel as a storytelling device allows him to tell a certain type of story. And the point that he's trying to get across, I think he oftentimes successfully conveys. The first, you know, sort of really, really high profile episode which he wrote with Ron Moore was All Good Things.
All Good Things makes sense time travel wise. There's only one plot hole in it.
Okay, so there you go. He nailed it with All Good Things. Well, Josh, what did you think about All Good Things?
I thought it's excellent. It's one of the best episodes of the whole series. I think it was just a great send off to the series. The way they got all the characters involved. It was, I mean, considering it was time travel and it was tricky, they managed to pull it off very successfully.
And Max,
when I first watched it, I was like, "That's incredibly complicated," and that was part of my you know, obsession with time travel. I was very interested in how they did it, and the deeper you analyze that, the more sense it makes. And I remember realizing, like a year after it aired, I was sitting there talking about the time travel and how it made sense. And I was like, so like in the past, it's a different timeline. In the future, it's a different timeline. It's a timeline from like that departs from the present where they're in. And I was like, oh my God, it's A Christmas Carol.
I never thought about that, but yeah.
I agree that it is an excellent episode. I've always enjoyed it quite a bit, but at the same time, and I've talked about this before, but I always kind of don't like the fact that they tie it into Encounter at Farpoint. I mean, it makes absolute perfect sense, you know, in terms of bookending it and everything. It's just that
you still want to remember it.
I dislike Encounter at Farpoint so much, and every time I watch All Good Things, I feel like I need to watch Encounter at Farpoint first.
You're an Encounter at Farpoint.
Why?
Big.
Oh,
it's almost like it's a part two kind of thing.
Whoa.
You know, I have trouble enjoying All Good Things on its own, and yet I have trouble enjoying it because I have to watch Encounter at Farpoint, and I have trouble enjoying Encounter at Farpoint.
You're alone in that. I mean, I never have any desire to watch Encounter at Farpoint.
All right, so after that, you know, Brandon Braga continued his Next Generation career with the first two movies, you know, the first one being Star Trek Generations, which, again, he co-wrote with Ron Moore. Josh, are you a fan of Generations?
No. Not at all. There are some decent things in there, but it's overall, it's just a really weak cinematic effort. I think only stands up by the fact that it was the first movie. It's very forgettable.
Max, what about you?
Yeah, pretty much. When I first saw it, I had really, really mixed feelings. And then gradually over the years, my feelings have become very, very, you know, oh well.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, I've said this many times, but Generations is, you know, very near and dear to my heart.
It was the first Star Trek movie you saw in theaters, right?
First one I saw in theaters. First movie I saw in theaters, for all intents and purposes. Okay. If you want to look at it in a certain
way.
Crazy. I love Generations, and, you know, I think it, like, I legitimately think it's better than All Good Things.
That's
a lot
wrong.
There's a lot of good that I see in Generations, but more than anything, it... you know, sort of made me fall in love with the wonder of the big screen, and for that, you know, I will forever be grateful of that movie. And I mean, you want to talk about Brandon Braga and like any problems that you may have with his work? He wrote like the movie which got me into movies, so I can't, you know, I have to love the guy for that. So after the success of Generations, they brought Braga and Moore back to write First Contact, which is easily the most successful and most well-acclaimed of the Next Generation movies.
Yeah.
Josh, what are your feelings on First Contact?
It's pretty cool. I remember being, you know, really jazzed to see it, of course, when it came out, and of course, my expectations were incredibly high because I was really disappointed by Generations. But with First Contact, it was just, I was on board the whole time. It just kept getting better. It's not real thick on story. It doesn't need to be. It's just an action adventure. It involved one of the best elements from the show, the Borg, when the Borg were actually cool. It was neat.
Yeah, Max, what are your thoughts on First Contact?
You know, I was looking forward to it, I suppose.
Oh, you didn't like it?
No. I like when I went to see it, I remember very vividly being worried. And then when the Borg Queen showed up, I remember thinking, I might have to hate this.
All right, but come on, man. It's fun, isn't it? It's fun.
No, it isn't. It isn't fun to me when I'm watching a movie and like every time somebody's shooting at something, my thought process is they are not doing anything that matters right now. Like this action sequence doesn't make any sense. Okay. Like, there's no reason for those Borg to be shooting at those guys.
Okay, Max, just bring yourself down to the rest of the world. Turn off your brain and just don't think so much about it. Just try to have a good time.
Yeah, I understand, but I mean, like, the level of like absurdity in that movie, I would accept from like Spinal Tap. In the context of Star Trek, the Borg's
Spinal
actions,
Tap.
The Borg's actions are so insane. I don't understand why, like, people in the theater were not confused, because they literally change their plan every scene.
Okay, I'm going to stop you guys again here, because, again, this is another one of those cases where I have heard this argument before, and, you know, I am of the opinion that you tend to look at movies from a very Vulcan point of view.
Thank you.
You are a very logical thinker. You are not ruled by emotion when it comes to movies.
Thank you.
In many instances, said that you don't care about how a movie makes you feel.
Are you trying to seduce me?
People like me and Josh are much more willing to forgive logical flaws in a movie as long as the emotion behind it, you know, helps to get the point across, you know, and that's the end goal, is what the point is, you know, at least to me.
Yeah.
A big point with First Contact, I think a very, very calculated point, was to make this a fun movie, a much more fun movie than Generations was. And I think on that level they succeeded, because when I watched that movie, you know, back when it came out, and when I watch it today, I have a lot of fun watching that movie. So after the movies and everything like that, after, you know, he after Next Generation, he went off to work on Star Trek Voyager. Mm-hmm. And after 4 years on Voyager and sort of slowly creeping his way up the ranks of the writing staff, he was handed the reins to the show in season 5, and he was the show runner for seasons 5 and 6. Now, Josh, you're probably more familiar with Voyager than any of us. What are your thoughts on the Braga years of Voyager?
I think the show went in a direction in season 4 when they brought Jerry Ryan on. It brought in that whole Borg thing, which they exploited to the extreme. But they did have a lot of standalone episodes that were good. So I think the years he had the reins were fine.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, I you know, I come from, you know, the point of view of somebody who watched the original series in its entirety and then the Next Generation from day one. And, you know, I was so in the world that at the time when Voyager began, I was infuriated by the format and the Star Trekkiness of the show. I mean, like, there are episodes where they are so dead on to their format and the characters are so cutesy and perfect that I couldn't deal with it, and it was very frustrating. And with some distance, I revisited the show, and approaching it without that, you know, deeply inborn desire to, you know, change things up and see something new, I was able to like recognize that the show was doing a lot of things that were very new, and it was actually exploring some really cool stuff. And that's like the thing that I really like about that show is that it was doing the thing that Star Trek had sort of forgotten with Deep Space Nine, and I lamented the loss of the strange, weird idea that we're going to explore for an episode that has never been done on TV before, and maybe has never been done, period. And those were the episodes that I really responded to, and a lot of those were, you know, Braga's like stuff. I mean, a lot of his stuff was out there, weird sci-fi ideas, and that's what I loved in the original series, and that the loss of that in Deep Space Nine was frustrating, and seeing it in Voyager is really nice because it is a part of Star Trek that I would be sad if it was lost permanently.
You know, I obviously I'm not a huge fan of Voyager, and you know, while I do on the whole enjoy the series, just I don't enjoy it as much as the rest of Star Trek. You know, I always thought that the first few seasons were a little weak, and then once Seven of Nine came on board, it did get substantially better. It's one of those weird things where, you know, I think they brought her on for obvious ratings reasons, and sort of one little side effect, which maybe no one counted on, or maybe they slipped by, and I think Braga had a lot to do with it, is the fact that she was the most compelling character on the show. After sort of, you know, very, very, you know, hesitantly working my way through the first three seasons, I became like very engaged in season four. And I thought that season four and season five and season six were very, very good. And, you know, like I said, you know, just a minute ago, I think that Braga had a huge part to do with that. Obviously, you know, season five and season six, it was his show, but season four, you know, you look at like the episodes that he wrote during that season and everything, he was definitely sort of taking more and more control of the series and pushing it into a certain direction. And I don't think that it's necessarily a coincidence that once he left to go develop Enterprise, and, you know, in season seven it was handed off to someone else, the show took a bit of a dip. And, you know, as much as Voyager is the show that everyone loves to hate on, and Braga is the writer that everyone loves to hate on because of his association with Voyager, I think that, you know, the stuff that Braga did on Voyager is legitimately good. And after that, I mean, you know, having been the head writer on, you know, the only Star Trek show for, you know, a year even, he was hired to co-create the new Star Trek show with Rick Berman, which became Enterprise. And this would be the first of two shows that he created for television. So, Josh, what do you think about Enterprise? Are you an Enterprise fan?
Yeah, I think it's a great show. I know people had, well, still to this day, a lot of problems with the, they didn't do what they were supposed to do, you know, introduce us to, make it a true prequel, you know, introduce us to the elements that made the original series until the fourth season. And I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. I think their first two seasons were good. Season three had the whole Zindi thing, which was an interesting experiment. I enjoyed it. It's not a season that you can go back and watch particular episodes because they're so interwoven. You know, you kind of have to watch it from beginning to end. Season four, you know, I'll agree, is probably their strongest, though. I mean, that's when they started bringing in those things that we wanted. But I don't want to discount everything that came before because it's not like it wasn't a good show.
Max?
Every time Enterprise comes up, the same narrative is presented. Seasons one and two were boring. Seasons three and four were really good. And I feel like seasons one and two were definitely boring. And season three and four were a horrible thing done to Star Trek as a franchise. The show that had started as, you know, having a philosophical point of view and having interesting ideas and new ways of looking at things and a rather enlightened and intellectual approach to conflict resolution, embraced violent solutions to all conflicts, and an extremely childish view of self and group identity.
Yeah. Okay.
I never picked up on that. I mean, I guess I can kind of see that with season three, but I think that it became, you know, sort of philosophical, you know, and started asking hard questions that Star Trek, you know, oftentimes didn't, and maybe coming up with solutions which Star Trek normally wouldn't.
After 9/11, the show jumped on board with the idea that when attacked, you respond with violence. And it informed the rest of the show. The rest of the series was informed by that logic. In fact, Archer at some point, like, just starts saying, like, you know, I didn't want to do this, but, you know, they attacked us, so we attacked them. It's a harsh universe. You got to fight back.
But I think that, you know, like, as it continues, you start to see, like, an arc, and, you know, maybe there's some realization that, you know, there's more to it than that, and
they never behave that way, and the show never
recognizes
that.
I mean, I think that they do. I think that, you know, like, once you see, like, what the motivations are behind the Zindi and everything like that, you see that there's more to it than just, you know, they attacked us, we attacked them. I mean, I don't remember the specifics, but it definitely is much more complicated than, you know,
Unlike just like a raw narrative level. I'm saying that the people making the show never presented stories that had conflicts that were resolved in intelligent and enlightened ways. Like, literally, their resolutions always involved some sort of violent action. And there are actually episodes that, like, were explicitly dealing with the idea of, like, torture. And the show ultimately came down on the side of, like, sometimes you've got to torture.
Are you just talking about in the latter seasons?
Yeah, season 3 and 4, because that's where the show shifted. The show shifted very dramatically at the end of season 2. It became a different series. And I think that the core thing of Star Trek, of being a show about ideas, became perverted by people who had very conservative aggressive ideas.
I don't think politics had anything to do with it. I mean, I think it was just them commenting on the fact that in the first two seasons they were very naive. But then, you know, they pushed themselves too quickly, too fast, and too hard, too fast. And when they got out into the universe, they found out that, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that do want to do you harm. Not everyone wants to meet you and be friends.
I mean, it's the type of thing where I do think that I would have to watch it again. I did not pick up on that at the time. But, I mean, it's also, you know, I guess in some ways indicative of the time. There were a lot of people who felt that way. And perhaps if the show is being made now, you know, looking at it with some distance, you know, it wouldn't be the same.
Well, yeah, you know, you could be right, Max. You know, I mean, Star Trek has done that. I mean, science fiction does that. It'll comment on the present by setting the story in the future. And they did that in the original series. I mean, yeah, maybe they did do that. I don't know. I wasn't thinking about it when I watched it.
For me, I mean, like, I think that the early seasons suffer from a lot of what Voyager suffered from, you know, I mean, franchise fatigue, you know, as they call it, you know, the idea that they were kind of treading water. I thought that, you know, they had a great concept coming out of the gate, and the first two seasons was just kind of like the same old Star Trek that we had always seen, just with, like, kind of a slightly different angle. And then when season 3 came about and they decided to do, like, a season-long arc, I thought that that was a really interesting idea. And I thought that it was a really good arc. And in season 4, you know, when they decided to do these mini arcs, which would, you know, look at the history of Star Trek, I was really on board with that. And I think that, you know, a lot of them are varying degrees of quality, but I thought that, you know, a lot of the stuff was really excellent. So I think that it was a show which, you know, just like all the other shows, took some time to grow. And once it grew, it became something which was really interesting. And whether or not it has, you know, sort of a right-wing agenda, which is in there, it's quite possible. You know, like, a lot of things, you know, from that time period did. And I think that, if anything, you know, it's a reflection of the time that the show was created, and, you know, a reflection of the people who were creating it. And, you know, while I don't necessarily agree with that point of view, I think that it is interesting to see a show from that point of view. And I don't think that the politics behind it makes it like inherently bad. And I think that there, you know, even if I don't agree with the politics behind it, I can still appreciate, you know, the other stuff that they were doing. Well, anyway, I think that Braga did a good job regardless of creating that show. When you like, he's been on Twitter lately and, you know, he's dropped a few little tidbits about like what their original intent for the show was and, you know, kind of how they had to modify it in order to appease the network and the studio. And, you know, he's talked about, I think there was an idea where, like, season one was going to be Earthbound. You know, they weren't going to launch until, you know, the season finale or whatever. You know, and I thought that that was a really interesting idea. I kind of would have liked to have seen, you know, what would have happened if he was given free reign. But I guess we'll never know. But I think the end product is interesting. I think that one of the interesting things is, you know, the series really did sort of come into its own as Braga sort of took a back seat, which is kind of the opposite of what happened with Voyager. But, you know, what can you do? Sometimes you need fresh eyes to look at something and
Use fresh eyes.
Okay, it doesn't matter. And see where your faults may lie and go from there. And any final thoughts on Brannon Braga, Josh?
Well, I think I've pretty much said my piece about him. I know he is, like you said, the Star Trek writer, the person that people like to hate. I find it amusing that people will throw that word around, you know, hate. I think he's brought a lot to Trek, not always for the better, but he has shaped it into pretty much what it became today. So I celebrate the man. You know, I'm glad he's around.
All right, Max.
Like when I grew up watching, you know, Next Gen and Deep Space Nine and then Voyager, I got very frustrated with Brannon Braga, and then he took a backseat on Enterprise, and I realized how much I liked him.
I used to fall prey to the sort of general Star Trek fandom thing of blindly bashing Brannon Braga because he's a very, very easy target. But when you sit back and you look at his work and you look at it, at all of the stuff that he's done, it's just like, oh my God, you know, he has done some of the absolute best Star Trek ever.
I think the same is true of Berman.
Yeah, the same is true with Berman.
And it's a very strange realization when you realize that, right, like that guy that you were so frustrated with was responsible for a lot of the great stuff that you didn't notice. Because it was like, yeah, obviously Star Trek's great. Whatever. Good job making a decent story,
right,
Rick,
right,
Berman.
Right. No, I mean, that's totally true. I spent 10 years hating on Rick Berman and being like, look at what he did. Did you hear what he said about that one little thing? Oh my God. That guy is ridiculous.
History's greatest monster.
Yeah.
Why? Because he didn't want Wesley to be angry with that guy.
He did that one stupid thing. And it's like, okay, yeah, but what about, you know, the 13 years or whatever it is of, you know, high quality entertainment that he also, you know, pushed out? I mean, that was the thing. B&B, you know, you see it all the time on the internet. Those guys that ruin Star Trek, you know?
Ugh.
And it's like you look at it.
They're so wrong.
They did not ruin Star Trek.
They are
totally responsible for an overwhelming majority of quality versus crap. Anyway, I like Brannon Braga. And after seeing him at the convention and him seeing the way that he interacts with fans, like, it's very strange because he gets up there and you can tell that he is totally aware of what the fans think of him, and he's kind of resigned himself to that and taken a very self-deprecating look at it. But at the same time, like, if you see interviews with him, he's kind of like, hey man, you know what, cut me some slack, you know?
Yeah, I
come on.
Like, in
get off
years,
my
I,
threshold.
I have come to like him quite a bit.
Yeah. So that's it for Brannon Braga's work on Star Trek. Next week we're going to look at the only other show that he created, and that's Flash Forward. And then after that, it'll be our recap, which is our big season finale. So, Josh, where can people find you? You're on Twitter, right?
Yeah, barely. My Twitter handle is at Josh from Mars.
So, yeah, be sure to check out The Soulless Minions of Orthodoxy. It's really good movie commentaries. And, yeah, thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
As always, you can find us on our other show at commentarytrackstars.com, or you can find us on Twitter at comtrackstars, or email us at comtrackstars@gmail.com. And we'll be back next week to talk about Flash Forward.